Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour as the producer is boggled with new creations. Where we're keeping the conversation light, that's L-I-G-H-T. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. The producer is here now.
Yeah.
Pat Hamilton. Joining us in a few moments in the Extra Hour is John Paul Ramos, who we're excited to know that he's going to be in the Emerald Coast very, very soon.
This week, I think.
How about that?
This week. If you missed it, you've got to catch the first hour where we're talking about the shift that's taking place. A shift is taking place. And not only that, but a sign, several signs. The shot that was heard around the world. Also in regards to the freeing up of Joseph. The freeing up of Joseph. Some different things taking place. Realize God is doing something. He's prepared for himself a people. There is a people that will respond to the voice of God, and we are preparing ourselves to be a part of it, or he's prepared us to be a part of it. We're also going to be continued today with the fifth part of the Malachi prophecies in regard answering the question, is this the last pope? The words that were spoken by a Malachi prophet named Malachi 900 years ago appears to be totally coming to pass today. And so much more. Also, we're going to be talking to you about a young man's experience with the Word of God, and even he says in his dreams about just like Revelation, the book of Revelation. We'll be sharing that as well, reading from scriptures ourselves to find out, what meanest thou this? You are listening to VFN Radio. It's Extra Hour, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me is Pat Hamilton.
Hello.
And just a few, John Ramos will also be joining us. Yes, we're going to be talking about the Malachi prophecies, continuing on with all these things that are taking place. I can't wait to share with you the details of what's taking place. Also, about the doctor, when God's news behind the news, that when this doctor that was on trial, you got to hear this. You got to hear about what's taking place. Well, the doctor was just on trial for murder,
this is,
right?
Kermit Gosnell from Pennsylvania, who ran an abortion clinic. And, you know, we originally spoke about on VFN Radio how the media was silent about this. I mean, this doctor here, horrific, bizarre practices. I mean, snipping spinal cords of aborted babies. And here just recently in Philadelphia, looks like the judge has thrown out three of the eight charges of murder that he's facing. CBN is reporting on this. We want you to listen up.
The judge in the trial of a Philadelphia abortion doctor has thrown out three of the eight charges of murder he faces. Prosecutors charged Dr. Kermit Gosnell in the death of a 41-year-old patient and seven babies reportedly born alive. They told jurors the babies were killed by Gosnell and his staff by cutting their spines. Gosnell's attorney has argued that there was no scientific or objective evidence that they were born alive. Today, the judge dismissed three of the baby's murder charges without explaining why. Former employees have been convicted and testified against Gosnell, acknowledging that patients received anesthesia and labor-inducing drugs from untrained staff in squalid conditions.
Well, you think about it. It is amazing that this has taken place with they would drop these charges without even explaining what's going on.
Wow.
Yeah. We reported and we shared. I mean, this is horrific what's been happening at this clinic. Already former employees have been convicted and they've testified. They testified against this doctor. And they've acknowledged that patients have received anesthesia and labor-inducing drugs from untrained staff in horrible conditions. I mean, it's horrible. Still right now, there's remaining four charges for infant deaths. And of course, he's also charged with a first-degree murder in a woman's death. And so, but there's no explanation, no nothing. Just completely just thrown out.
Right.
It's like, come on now.
Well, and so there's actually five additional charges that they're working on. Is that correct? Then if there's eight?
Correct. Yeah, there's five additional charges.
This now, is the worst case. Yeah, the way that American law works, just so you understand this, if you don't, is this is like a Roe versus Wade major. Mm-hmm. Can turn, and we're believing it's going to turn everything, because we've been praying, dear God, end abortion, send revival. That if this case is won against this doctor, it will change all the laws,
changes everything.
Every law based on abortion, understanding that then if that's the murder of this child,
mm-hmm.
then all doctors have murdered the children.
Exactly.
And it's a big one to swallow, but you know, I'm willing to give, you know, to prevent any future babies being born, to say, you know, whatever that was, let's just stop. Just stop, you know,
right.
and they'll receive justice at the throne of God.
I'm sorry.
You know, and if they continue on, then at that point, you know, because they were doing under the law at that point, whatever law it was, they just stop all abortions.
Right.
And if they win this case and he gets charged with murder, then that trumps Roe versus Wade. That trumps several cases.
Yeah.
And it says, let the decision stand. That's what they say. Let the decision stand. And then all of a sudden now they'll start basing new decisions off of that in their next decision. Not that logic applies to anything. Not that it applies to anything anymore. But based, if God lets us to continue to have America and lets us operate in our Constitution, that's very relevant.
Right.
That's very relevant. And so that's we got five more cases. And maybe they just removed the three that they thought that they might lose and they went with, but they get the five in there.
Mm-hmm.
The five cases right there. You know, murder's murder.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Murder's murder. And join us in our prayer that we've been praying with many others, dear God, end abortion and send revival.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Now, what is this about the Associated Press? This is God's News Behind the News.
Yes.
And by the way, just so you know too, that God's perspective, his word's perspective about this abortionist doctrine, abortion, is that it's the shedding of innocent blood. We cannot continue to think that God's going to bless our country with millions of children's innocent blood being shed.
Mm. Right.
And we have to stop it. And if you haven't heard or watched Josiah yet on VFN TV, you need to listen to Josiah, because we are Josiah and we have to put an end to it by us making that decision. And that's you know, we always want to talk about what's the word's perspective of it. And God was so upset about the innocent bloodshed, he told Josiah, which was the best king that had ever lived, according to what was spoken over him, before him and after him, was because of the innocent blood, it still was going to come. The storm was going to come, and God's people were going to go into captivity. And it happened just like, you know, God said it would. So you need to understand that. Go watch Josiah on VFN TV. Go to VFNTV.com. And in the middle of your menu, it says VFN TV. Click on that, and you'll see several prophetic teachings there, and one is Josiah.
Right.
What is this thing about you're saying that the president's Associated Press Twitter feed was hacked?
Yeah, it was hacked. It was hacked by people, a group that's taking claim. They're loyal to the president of Syria, and they hacked the account. This happened yesterday.
How do they know it was actually Syrian people that hacked his account?
Well, they're not reporting account, that they know that, but they're taking credit for it. They're taking credit for it.
Okay.
But what was hacked and what was said on AP, the Associated Press's Twitter account, this is what it read: breaking, two explosions in the White House and Barack Obama is injured. When that went out, the stock market within seconds lost over 130 points.
That's it? Just 130 points?
That results in over $130 billion in loss. Just within seconds.
Wow.
And so once they found out that it was, you know, a hoax, it was wrong, even the press secretary.
That's a crime, isn't it?
Yeah, well, FBI's involved. And yeah, FBI's involved right now. This is hard, you know. The president's spokesman, Jay Carney, immediately said, hey, that's a hoax. We just left with the president. Everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And, but also $130 billion in the stock market recouped. One analysis says these computers are set just to go off. As soon as he saw the stock market plunge, he said in his mind, You know, he thought, oh my goodness, there must have been another bombing. Nothing drives the stock market like this. And then he saw the Twitter feed and he said, could this be real? This is, you know, this is a one, person who's watching.
One, a few little words typed out on somebody's Twitter account is like, really? They really, people believe this stuff.
Mm-hmm. They believe this stuff.
And wow. Well, the thing that concerns me too, and these are alleged statements that we're reading off
correct.
Of
the USA Today.
USA Today reporting that. And so, but the thing about it when, you know, the biblical perspective or the prophetic perspective of it is God's, you know, spoken to, you know, several people. I think about John Paul Jackson about how, you know, threats would be made on our president's life by Islam, by Muslims, and they would try to make it look like it was, you know, somebody in America that had done it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when God has spoke to you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, God spoke to me. God spoke to me in a dream. Right before the election, the president was at that time running for office, and no one was, either candidate wasn't established yet, so they're still in the primaries. And this was all during the time that the Reverend Jeremiah Wright thing all came out. And when that came out, and inwardly, and I'm just thinking, oh, this, you know, there's no way that he can overcome this. This is really bad. And I've been following the election closely, like many people were at the time. And I remember, you know, just going to bed like normal. And God gave me a dream. Gave me an amazing dream. And in that dream, I had saw that the president had actually won. He actually won the election. And he's standing in the middle of a living room. And as he's standing in front of the living room, there's two white-haired men in the back that were behind him. And the way he's standing was like on the cover of the Times. There's a Time cover where he had his arms folded. And it's the same thing that I saw him. And then I saw two white-haired men, you know, just patting him on the back and kind of congratulating him in a way. And then in the very next scene, I see the president who's just laying down dead right in like the living room with a murder scene like you see on like a television program where they etch the body out in tape or chalk. And instantly I just woke up. I Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. And I remember grabbing my wife's leg and just think, oh my goodness, you know, it's a setup.
He's been set up. He's been set up. And that's exactly what John Paul Jackson was saying, you know, with Strange Ministries. This is way before as well.
Mm-hmm.
That he was going to be set up by Muslims. It has to be radical Muslims. Mm-hmm. It would be all Muslims. And radical Islam, I would assume. But not sure. And they would try to make it look like somebody in America had done that. But look, right. America is like, you know, we believe in diversity of speech, and that's who we are. You know what I'm saying? That would be something that would happen in an Islamic culture, but it wouldn't happen in American culture.
That's right.
So suddenly.
So we pray for our president. We have been praying for many years now, him and his family, and we just continue to pray for him.
And God, you know, we're told to pray for those in authority over us. Understand, especially in America, that our president is one of us. That we actually vote him into office, or her, you know, whoever's the president, and they are a reflection of us. This is one thing our current president said. He said, "I'm a Christian, just like you are."
Hmm.
Talking to America,
mm-hmm.
And that's pretty accurate.
Yeah,
when you look at today's church, you know, not biblically correct. You know, mixing gods together with Jesus and doing these different things, because when we vote in people into office, and we don't vote if we don't want that. And so understand, we're supposed to pray for, we want a safe presidency. We want his family to be safe. We want the Secret Service that are around him to be safe and wise, and things to be revealed to them because those are the ones that are, you know, keeping an eye out, and the FBI to be wise, and we want to pray over them that God would give them wisdom. And there's people outside of America and some people that have infiltrated our country that they don't want us around. They don't, they're, this is what the president swore an oath to do, to protect the Constitution of the United States from enemies, foreign and domestic, which means enemies that are outside against our Constitution, enemies that are inside the country against the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And this is done so by the government that we elect to go there. And so we need to pray for them. I mean, every day there's agents putting their life on the line.
That's right.
There's soldiers putting their life on the line. There's FBI, there's marshals, there's local law enforcement. And listen, God's in control. And praying for them and sharing truth with them is what God's called us to do. And we do not want anything to come into, we want any enemy of the Constitution to be successful in their attempts to be able to harm our country or harm anyone in our country. And when you saw what happened in Boston with the law enforcement and all the convergence of all the different agencies, it just brought, you know, I was encouraged to see mm-hmm. again the zero tolerance nature. It was like, we're going to fine you.
That's
and,
right.
And we don't care. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're just stop everything. We're going to fine you, and justice is going to be served. And that's exactly what the chief of police said. You know, justice served. The person is captured now. And just a very powerful, powerful thing. Well, I want you to hear Cooper. Cooper, he's reading the Action Bible, and it's so cool because he's saying that his experience is, when we get back from this break, you'll hear, is that he reads about it, and then he dreams about it. But it's pretty interesting because I want to talk about Revelation chapter 13 and what's taking place, and we'll just let Cooper begin our conversation of that. You're listening to VFN Radio.
Can you lose your job for referring to your faith? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
Out of the blue here all of a sudden last Wednesday morning, here comes my boss walking into one of the stores I was in, and he goes, I'm going to have to let you go. And I said, for what? And he said, harassment. You can't tell people that if you're not religious, you're going to go to HELL. And I said, I didn't say any of that.
Yeah, let me tell you this. You can't be fired for your faith, and it had to be documented. There was this attempt a few years ago to create what was called a religious-free zone at the workplace, but that did not come into fruition. And we beat those guidelines back. So, again, that's an overreaction. Let me get you in touch also with our lawyers here at the ACLJ and get you some help. And by the way, great resources, Gary, on our website. The On the Issues section, when you go there, right there on the website, has a whole section about workplace and what you can and cannot do. But yeah, since you've been terminated here, let me get you in touch with our lawyers.
Visit us at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
You know, when we first started trying to articulate, you know, what God was doing with us, you know, we thought, you know, how do you explain God? I mean, how do you explain family? How do you because it's just kind of hard. The paradigm shift is so huge from going to church to being the church, you know, from that building being the temple of God to us being the temple of God, and then in families, really family. You know, Jesus said when his mother Mary was outside and his brother was outside knocking on the door because they thought he lost his mind because he was ministering actually in a house, he was, and to his disciples, and they were coming to rescue him because he hadn't eaten. They're going to rescue God, John. They're going to rescue God. And that he hadn't eaten in a couple of days. And they just knew because that was their family. They thought, that's my family. That's my relative in there, so he'll actually come out. And so somebody tells Jesus, he says, you know, your mother and your brother's outside wanting to talk to you. And he goes, who is my mother? This is God speaking through his son, Jesus Christ, right? He said, who is my mother? Who is my brother? And today's church will say, the people knocking on the door?
Right.
But that's not what he said. He said this, he said, those who do the will of my Father, when he was looking at his disciples sitting in front of them. We've got to recapture again the understanding of the family of God, because the truth is,
that if we really love our family, we're going to share with them the gospel of Jesus Christ, because if they don't know Jesus Christ, they're not going to make it into the family of God and into eternity in heaven. And so we want them to be able to make it. But, you know, we try to come together, try to come out a way to explain that. We did that with the Vine seminars. You know, that we first had a Vine seminar to be able to explain us, to take us from these mindsets of realizing that we have an awesome King and God who loves us, and he wanted family, and to that we are the ark of God, and God's presence dwells with us, and it's just awesome thing of activation. And it's an exciting thing. The Vine seminars about, you know, Vine Fellowship Network, but also it's just grown into other seminars as well. And so if you want to find out more about Vine seminars, from marriage to personality, from, you know, what it's like just to be the church, you know, maybe you can glean from it. Go to vineseminars.org.
This is VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. Light meaning the light of the world, not light like easy. We're doing that so that you can actually not be a part of that. Listening to VFN Radio may be your only light. Mm-hmm. It may be your only opportunity during a day that every news broadcast, every radio broadcast, every conversation is just dark.
Mm-hmm.
It's doubtful. It's this Hitler-like type conversations, or mm-hmm. Aryan-type conversations, or Iranian, or Muslim-type conversations, or political, which is... type conversations, or you could listen to VFN Radio and you're able to hear what's taking place, but then you can hear what God's word says about it, and you can get a perspective and you go, hey, I can know things without being terrified. I can, God has prepared me during this day to have a peace in the midst of whatever's going on. There's going to be a great harvest. We're believing and praying that God would bring a third great awakening to America, and a great awakening changes the DNA of the nation. They said Hitler's goal was to de-Christianize the church, and they wanted to infiltrate it with political people. And what do we have today? We have people who are very politically connected and into some different political parties, and they like the whole scheme of the thing. And then they're coming into the churches, and they're trying to de-Christianize it and make it more of a social justice movement. And that's what's taking place right now. Listen, I know this firsthand. And as a community organizer, I saw in my history, my past, that the church was being infiltrated by men and women who weren't Christians. Mm-hmm. And the church was just letting them come in to do social justice movements. You got to hear that. We have to understand this. God's people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. VFN Radio gives you that knowledge and that wisdom and that light. Welcome back to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. Joining me is Pat and John. We're just talking about what has taken place in the shifting that's taking place, and we're seeing how the court system has winked at three children, being, according to witnesses who were there, this abortion doctor, and also, and they let them off those three, but there's five more that actually they were going to continue to pray for justice, that this would be the case,
right?
Mm-hmm. That the case law begins to come off of, let the decision stand. And also in regards to how easily, you know, I mean, what God says is going to come to pass, but sometimes he tells us so we can pray and repent so that it wouldn't come to pass.
Right.
God will change his plans if we'll change our heart. And when the Twitter feed of the Associated Press, which you just heard, and you can go back and listen to it, was allegedly, according to the USA Today reporting, was hacked by some Syrian people saying that two explosions happened at the White House. And the stock market crash, you're looking at how volatile things are.
Yeah.
You know, how volatile that anything can happen. Well, I want to say you know, God is speaking. He's speaking in volume. The biggest way that God speaks to us is by his word, just reading his word. And quite often when you read God's word, because it's living, it's active, it's sharper than a double-edged sword, it penetrates to the dividing of bone and marrow, thought and intent, the attitudes of the heart, that sometimes God will even take that word that you're reading and speak to you about it, and even in a dream. You got to listen. This is Cooper. Cooper is, what, he's eight?
Exactly.
He's eight. He's having another experience as he's going, he's reading God's words. Like, literally, God is showing it to him, he says, you know, after his experience in it. Check it out.
So, Cooper, you were telling me you had a dream last night?
Yes, I did.
Well, you want to tell me about it?
Mm-hmm. It all started when we saw a black hole in the ground all had electricity coming out. We all looked in. It was black.
Who was we?
Like, my friends. And my mom. And my dad. It was black and hollow. Then we started to hear something. And that was the devil, writhing, in the shape of a dragon with six heads. They each had spikes on its head.
What color was the dragon?
Red. Had six heads, spikes going down its neck. And then we saw light in the sky. That was God. He said, oh, and the dragon tried to make us bow down to him. And then there's the crack of light. And God came out and said, you shall not make these people suffer. And he put his hand down, up, and threw a lightning bolt straight into the dragon.
Was the dragon by himself?
No. There were four men. The conqueror, war, famine, and death. Their horses were white, brown, green, and black.
Were they riding the horses?
Yes. They had these tools in their hand. The conqueror had a bow and arrow with crown. War had a sword with armor. Famine had something... like a balance beam. And Death had an axe.
Mm-hmm.
A special kind of axe, like a flag, mm-hmm. but curved.
Mm-hmm.
They came out with the red dragon.
And you said the sun stopped shining?
Yes. The sun was blocked, the moon turned red, the stars fell. And back to when God comes.
Does he come by himself?
No. When he threw that lightning bolt at him, at the devil, he called his men, all thousand of them.
Thousands of them?
Yes. And some had chains wrapped around his neck.
The dragon's neck?
Mm-hmm. The chains were to pull him back into the hole.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled and pulled all night and day until they finally pulled the dragon into the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were all free. God opened the gates of heaven. And we all went in.
We did?
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Did you remember anything else about the dream you want to share?
God was wearing a bright robe. And he said, do not be afraid. That I am with you.
That is.
Thank you.
You're welcome. welcome.
That is Cooper. That's so amazing, his experience in God, as he's just reading the words, coming alive, and he's sharing it, and he's saying, even he's having dreams about the Word of God, and you think, well, you know, what is this? It's just some kid's imagination and all that. Well, let's just look. Let's find out. Let's look at the book of Revelation, chapter 13. What does he say in chapter 13? Revelation chapter 13, verse 11. This is what John, the writer of it, was saying. He says, listen, then I saw a second beast coming out of the ground. Let me say it again. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. Isn't that wild? It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. Remember, he was talking about, he was saying that it was trying to make everybody worship.
Bow down.
Yeah. And trying to make everybody worship the first beast is what is in Revelation, whose fatal wound had been healed. This is where the person, the Antichrist, goes down and comes back up again. And it performed great signs and even caused fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast, it received the it deceived the inhabitants of the earth. And that's what he was talking about. You know, that it kept on trying to deceive people and you know, whatever. And it ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their hands or on their foreheads so that they could not buy or sell, which is do business, unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This wisdom, this is called wisdom. Let the people have insight, who do have insight, calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. And the number is 666. That's interesting, isn't it? This young man named Cooper's having. Why is this important? This is important for so many different reasons. First of all, about taking this mark of the beast so you can do business. Today, the excuse so many people who say they're following the Lord give about not living for God, who are doing things that God calls evil and or avoiding being faithful to God's leading or taking their time in their life to worship and serve God, is their job. They need to make money. It's just business. And the whole thing is about business. It's all about the economy. This is why it's so important, because he's going to be forcing this spirit of the land, and this man, it's going to be a man, you know, that is doing this in the context of that. And they say, well, what's the big deal? You know, it's just business. God will understand. Some people say, just because you take the mark doesn't mean, you know, that you can't still be a Christian.
Right.
Well, Revelation chapter 14 responds to that, because today, right now, this, what's pressing right this one moment is, how are you going to do business? Are you going to, and listen, if in fact, according to George Barnum, regular church attenders who go at least twice every other week are robbing from God and stealing from God, 97% are robbing from God and his tithes and offerings, 97%. They've already bought into the wrong economy. You know, and it says, wide is the road that leads to destruction, and narrow is the gate that leads to eternal life, and few that find it. And so the economy, it's not just, okay, I got my walk with Jesus, but my money is my money. My economy is my economy. I can do business, you know, ever how I want to do business. That's not what he's saying here. He's saying, listen, if you decide to do business like the beast, like the world system, it's not going to be good. Because look here, Revelation chapter 14, verse 9 through 13 says, and a third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and its image and receives its mark. In other words, first of all, You're not going to be allowed to do business in that dark culture, in that dark way, unless you get the mark, right? So
that's right.
If you balled right. in to doing it and you went ahead and took the mark, if anyone, this is the word of God, if anyone worships the beast, which means, remember, that he's trying to get them to bow down or forcing people to worship it. Mm-hmm. If anyone worships the beast and its image and receives its mark on their forehead or on their hand, they too will drink the wine of God's fury, mm-hmm. which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. Think about it. This is, you better pay attention. I mean, if you've got to understand, we got to pay attention to what's taking place, because you're going to be suffering from God's wrath. He says, they will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb. That's capital Lamb. That's Jesus. And the smoke of their torment will rise forever and ever. Listen, it's important how you do business.
That's right.
It's important if you take this mark or not. And you're only going to really know whether you're supposed to take it or not, if that's it or not, if you're actually following Jesus, not religion. You're going to have to be an abider and follow Jesus. There's going to be great deception. There will be no rest day and night for these folks, for those who worship the beast and its image, or for anyone who receives the mark of its name. This calls for patient endurance on the part of the people of God who keep his commands and remain faithful to Jesus. Listen, this is our hope. Our hope is an abiding relationship with Jesus Christ. Not do you know of him, but do you know him? Whether it's in Cooper's dream or the book of Revelation, just like we read, let me tell you something. It's happening before our very eyes. Right this moment, economies are rising. And what we've been shown, in 6 minutes, mm-hmm. the American economy is going to crash and the life as we know it is going to change on the face of this earth. You don't want to get into the line that says, if you want to do business in the world, if you want to do business in the future, then you have to take this particular device, this particular mark, this particular thing. You want to be able to pay attention and be willing to die for something, just refuse it. You know, to die is gain. Mm-hmm. And understand that if you'll do that, God will provide for you. Mm-hmm. He'll cause stuff to come out of the soil that never happened before. And all of a sudden you can eat, you know, wheat and barley, you know, something just starts happening. That's he teaches right. you how to grow things, or he rains manna from the sky, but don't take the mark. He said, this requires patient endurance on behalf of the people of God who keep his commands and remain faithful. We'll be right back in a moment with this last part of the interview on the Malachi prophecies. You've got to hear it. You're listening to VFN Radio.
You know, when you think about the church, you know, and what the enemy has done, the mindset, the vocabulary, and the first thing that God started doing with us is to recapture the vocabulary again of what God is actually saying. I mean, you can really mess things up by changing the meaning of words, you know. You could just change the meaning of it, and all of a sudden you've got things going in a different direction. And so we had to rediscover, you know, what is the church? And we found out that the church is not a building. You know, we like buildings. I got a couple of good friends that are buildings, you know. But the whole thing is that the church is people. You know, we're the building of God, that know ye not that Christ dwells in you. The hope of glory is inside of you. All these wonderful things that we talk about. But understanding this is that, you know, so when you begin to be the church and you're abiding with God and you're hearing him and you're operating in family, you know, you have brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers in the Lord and all this wonderful stuff, and it's just fun. You know, you just look for a time to go there, but you still have, you know, things you're dealing with. You're still in the same storm everybody else is in. You're still in the same nation. You're still in the same workplace. You know, so you're having these pains and these struggles you're going through, and it's difficult, but yet it's encouraging that we have this. But, you know, John, I could only imagine how hard it is for somebody right now. If you're listening to us today and you don't have that relationship, I mean, you love Jesus, you know, you're born again, but you're in this whole, I don't know, the best way I can describe it is tradition, where, you know, men's philosophies and concepts and programs, and but you're not in family. I mean, you can call things family. I mean, so many people call things family, but you know what family is. You don't have to call it family. It just is. And he's called us to be the family of God. And if you're going through all the same stuff that we're going through, but you're doing it outside of family. Think about it. That's got to be horrific. I couldn't imagine. Well, actually, I could, because I remember what it was like when I was going through that without having what God has done with us today in regards to family. Yeah, I mean, you might have had somebody that's friended you on Facebook, but, you know, just friending somebody does not mean that they're a friend. I mean, you think about it. If you had a, I know this, John. Remember when we went to help out with the hurricanes that happened in New Orleans?
Right.
And, you know, it was just horrific what happened, and still have scars today inside of our heart for what happened. It was so bad, couldn't fix it. And the crux of it really was in Waveland that was flattened, and then the waters, you know, busted in New Orleans and flooded. But, you know, the church didn't know each other, and they were scattered all over the place, and they couldn't find the church because there was no authentic family-type burdened relationship. So other parts of the church who didn't know the parts of the church come in and start helping everybody. But when we go back there, you remember when Pat and I had went back there, the Lord sent us back to New Orleans, and we were talking to Leo DeJesus and Sandy, awesome man and woman of God. And Leo, if you're listening today, Sandy, if you're listening today, we love you. You guys are so encouraging to us. And he has this wonderful upper room in his house that overlooks the Mississippi, looking right on the city of New Orleans. It's the city he's in is Gretna. He's in Gretna, overlooking the Mississippi. And he said that, but the pastors left the church. They just left. The shepherds, they left, you know. And Jesus says that's a hireling. It's a hard thing. But I have empathy, though, for a leader of a traditional situation because, you know, it goes both ways. You know, they don't have a relationship with you. You don't have a relationship with them. And the thing about family is you both have to invest.
That's right.
You know, but it's hard to do in that kind of setting. Well, I encourage you, if you haven't even thought about, you know, just walking out what God says in his word, that it's not foreign. It really is true. It's happening at the Vine Fellowship Network. It's actually happening. You can go to VFNfamily.org and find out more about it. It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation, that stand with us prayerfully and financially, that just partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation and this nation by God's grace to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. Welcome back to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. We are going right into the interview with Sid Roth when he was interviewing Tom Horn and Chris Putnam in their new books. And it is so powerful. It is so powerful when you hear this. Their first book was Petros Romanos, and their next is Exo Vaticana. And I want to have the whole interview for you, so we're going to go right in. This is Sid Roth. This is, I believe, part 5 of 10 of this interview.
Shalom, Mishpacha. Shalom, family. Mishpacha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpacha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people. We're the middle wall of separation between Jew and Gentile. It's finally come down to form one new man.
And it's so important what we're talking about here, because the statement where it's being said is that the final pope is here. The final pope is here. It's a 900-year-old prophecy by a prophet by the name of Malachi. And there's a lot of convergence there with this. But let's just listen to what they're saying about that. This is what they're saying. We're just reporting it through Sid Roth's interview.
Getting ready, Mishpacha, to blow the grandest shofar, the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere, to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere, to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest, Tom Horn, is co-author of the best-selling book, that many of you have been talking about called Petrus Romanus. It's the final pope is here. And you made headlines, literally, Tom, when you predicted that the pope would resign and the next pope would be the final pope. But before we get to some of your amazing background that God had to prepare you for this project, briefly describe why every Christian in the world must read Exo Vaticana.
Well, every person in the world should read Exo Vaticana for one reason, and I don't mean this as to brag. We were the ones who correctly predicted that Pope Benedict the 16th would step down, and we explained why he would, the first pope to do so in over 600 years. And in fact, Sid, we found out that we were more accurate than we had even thought that we would be. In last year's book, Petrus Romanus, which is picked up in this new book, Exo Vaticana, and by the way, Exo Vaticana is actually over 600 pages long, but the subject matter that we have been talking about, we had predicted, first of all, in the book last year, that Pope Benedict would step down in either March or April of 2012. Later in that work, we said, if he doesn't step down in March or April, he will before the end of 2013. Now, we found out that we were accurate in both cases, which is astonishing, right? We found out that in February the 11th, the New York Times, right after the Pope stepped down, they interviewed Giovanni Maria Vian. Now, that is the Vatican's spokesperson for the El Observatore Romano, which is their official media mouthpiece. And in that article, and people can look this up, it's the New York Times article, A Statement Rocks Rome, if they want to Google it and read it for themselves, they admitted Pope Benedict actually stepped down at the end of March 2012. He did so privately. He did so with a half dozen cardinals. And in fact, they said that his decision to step down then was held in what they call, quote, a reserve that no one could violate, end quote. So that couldn't even be shared among the Curia and among the other cardinals who would form the conclave. And immediately in April, they started remodeling a building that the nuns had been using there at the Vatican that would then serve as an apartment that the Pope would retire in. So he actually resigned officially right when we said he would, but then he didn't make it publicly official until this year in February of 2013, which was also what we said he would do. So, but the point about that is, if this incredible research, and it wasn't just Tom Horn and Chris Putnam, I had a team. I hired a private investigator. We spent over a year researching the material that would go into this book. We had probably 20,000 pages or more of documents, and this was a tremendous research project, and we wanted to make sure that we covered our trail, because if you're going to predict something that hasn't happened, you know, in 600 years, you probably ought to have good reasons for making such a spectacular decision. Well, if we were right about that, people are going to be blown away about what we're saying in Exo Vaticana. The bottom line is, there certainly are, from the horse's mouth, I mean, there are documents that were provided to us by leading astronomers and academics from the Vatican who were willing to talk to us. Over five times we interviewed from Rome the Vatican's top astronomer, Guy Cosmonalgo, and from their own mouths and the documents they sent us, they definitely are preparing for the arrival of an alien intelligence, and they definitely believe that this is going to require a change to the gospel as we've understood it until now. As a matter of fact, they believe that these intelligences are superior to us morally. They'll be coming here to evangelize us, and in fact, that to not believe in their message will be the real heresy. So this is a gigantic setup for what we believe to be an end times deception.
Well, it's a perfect scenario for the one world religion. I can just paint the picture. The world is in a catastrophic position. The economies are reeling. National disasters are going on in countries all over the world. The economy is falling apart. There's shortages of food. There's wars going on. I can paint that picture, and all of a sudden, what do you think the Catholic position will be when some alien comes in and says, I can help you, I can solve everything?
Well, Well, that's absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, anybody who reads this book, who reads the documents that we are providing in the book, in this, and in fact, I should also let audiences know that your ministry, Sid Roth, It's Supernatural, basically have a world exclusive on having the first release of this book before anybody else will be able to get it in their hands. But smack dab in the middle of this whole conspiracy isn't just, they're going to find it's not just NASA, it's not just aeronautic and space administrations like the European Space Agency, some of whom are saying that official disclosure is going to be made in the year 2013. They're going to find right in the middle of that the Vatican. And in many ways, that makes perfect sense. The scenario you just described, official disclosure of extraterrestrial intelligence, habitable alien world, suddenly some intergalactic messiah appears to solve all of our problems, and it's going to be warmly embraced by the world. And they will be in the middle of it because, as the most powerful church on Earth, it has its own diplomatic corps of ambassadors posted throughout the industrialized nations of the world. The Vatican is uniquely positioned and has been actively preparing, as we show in this book, for this moment. They have put themselves intentionally in the position to be the benefactors of an alien invasion.
But, you know, simultaneous with this, it seems as though the scriptures are being devalued. It's not being authentic. In fact, many of the Jesuit scientists don't even believe in the scriptures anymore.
Yeah, that's right. And as a matter of fact, the book starts out with Chris Putnam and I going to the Vatican Astronomical Technology Telescope in Mount Graham in southeastern Arizona to ask the Jesuit astronomers why. Why they've been carefully releasing to media in recent years these captivating comments having to do with an alien intelligence, and why they believe that that is going to so dramatically force, really, upon us a reevaluation of Christianity as we have understood it.
Now, tell me some of their responses to that.
Guy Cosmonolgo is a leading astronomer. He often turns up in media as a spokesman for the Vatican. He's worked at NASA. He's taught at Harvard. He's taught at MIT. And right now, he splits his time between the Vatican Observatory Laboratory, what's called the Spicola Vaticana, which is headquartered at the summer residence of the Pope in Castel Gandolfo, Italy. He splits his time between there and Mount Graham in Arizona. But he is one, and we interviewed him five times. He's one that's focused so much time and effort in recent years to reconcile science and religion in public forums, specifically as it relates to the subject of extraterrestrial life and its impact on the future of faith as we have known it, that he was specifically a person that we targeted. By the way, once he knew who we were and what we were really doing, then he still kept talking to us, but his answers became really short, if not altogether evasive. But on the upside, he was gracious enough to send us a copy of a private PDF, which is a gold mine of what he and the Vatican are considering regarding the ramifications of ET. And in that, what he says, to answer your question, is that, first of all, the Bible is not contrary to the idea of extraterrestrial intelligence. Then, to illustrate the soundness of that possibility, he argues that humans are not the only intelligent beings in the universe, and that this is proved by the Bible. And then he astonished us by making his theological argument by pointing to the angels that fell and created the Nephilim of Genesis chapter 6. He actually goes through and details how they came down and what they did, and then he ends it saying, if you interpreted those creatures as angels, aliens, whatever you want, it doesn't really matter for the sake of the argument. The point is that ancient writers of the Bible, like all the ancient people, were perfectly happy with the possibility that other intelligent beings could exist that could be morally superior to us, who could also revisit the earth again in the near future. And I emailed him back and I said, well, now think about what you're saying. I mean, do you actually mean to use the story of the Nephilim from the Bible as an example of the kind of space saviors that you're looking for to come for our salvation? This just seems incredible to me, and yet when people read Exo Vaticana, they'll find that it is substantiated over and over again by some of the leaders. He also, by the way, quoted to John 10:16 that says, another sheep have I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice and be one fold and be one shepherd. And he said, perhaps it's not so far-fetched to see the second person of the Trinity. Now get this, I'm quoting him now. He writes to me, perhaps it's not so far-fetched to see the second person of the Trinity, the Word, who was present in the beginning, John 1:1, coming to lay down his life and take it up again, not only as the Son of Man, but also as a child of these other races, end quote. That's an end quote. So again, I emailed him back and I said, really? Vatican scholars believe that Jesus might have been the star child of an alien race? I mean, do the Jesuits really hold that the virgin birth was in reality an alien abduction scenario in which Mary was impregnated by E.T. giving birth to a hybrid Jesus? So it's amazing. Now, I should tell you, I also have had Catholics who have heard us on radio and television talking about some of this stuff over the last year that have emailed me and said, you know, these Jesuits absolutely do not reflect our true faith. I mean, these guys are utter heretics.
Well, if that's the truth, then what difference does it make?
Well, the difference that it makes is they're the ones who write the rules. Right now, there's Opus Dei level theologians who are writing the rules, who are writing the theology for Rome that will be in...
Whoops, we're out of time. We're going to pick this up right here next week. You can't possibly understand end times without these two books. They document secret files in the Vatican Library and belief in aliens. Petrus Romanus, The Last Pope, is the first book. The second book, literally, just off the press, not available in bookstores, exclusively with our ministry, is called Exo Vaticano.
But the good thing about it is you just listen to the conclusion of this particular 5 out of 10 part interview. It's available now on Amazon.com, or you can go to VFN Torch at VFNTV.com, and you can get it. This is an amazing thing. I wouldn't have believed it myself, but let's just research and find out ourselves. They're saying they're not prophets. They just asked the Jesuits. They asked them and they told them this. Let's just find out. The Malachi prophecy looks like it's coming to pass. You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.